Hello and welcome to Be the Wolf. I am your host, Janaea Barnes. Many people struggle to be the fullest, biggest, truest versions of themselves. They bend to fit into other people's ideals of who and what they should be. They tame their brilliance to avoid judgment and gain approval. A long time ago, people attempted to tame the wilderness of Yellowstone National Park by eradicating predators. Taming the wilderness collapsed the ecosystem. But there's hope. In the mid-90s, 41 wolves were introduced into the park, and with this, the ecosystem replenished itself and flourished. The wolves did nothing but be exactly who they are meant to be and do what they were born to do. So I say to you, be the wolf.
Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Be the Wolf. We're going to talk about people shooting all over you, using fear and shame and to tell you what you should do. Try and make you do it. And I'm here today with Lisa Edwards, Petcherson, and she is a speaker, an author, and a leadership development amazing woman. And she has really great skills in the way that she delivers messages for people so that they can hear them without feeling like they're shit all over. Hi, Lisa. I'm so happy you're here. Do you want to take the floor for a moment and tell everybody a little bit about you and what you do?
Yeah, well, good morning, Janaea. It's so wonderful to be with you today. What a privilege, what an honor to be on your podcast. I'm super excited. As you said, my name's Lisa Edwards Hutcherson. I am indeed all those things that you said, but I believe in the transformative power of people. I get up every day looking for ways to make a difference in this world, to be that game changer in whatever small or big way that looks like. And many days, I don't know what that looks like. And so I often ask God to show me where he's at work and what he's doing. And I just want to be a little bit of a part of that. Just let me play a little piece in that whole puzzle.
Well, my suspicion, it's more than a suspicion. I know you are playing a big piece. And I know this because of some of the stories that you've shared with me already. But when we think about this idea of telling people what they should do, and we are in the world right now where people are really stepping out to be equal and really stepping out to fight for their rights. And, you know, we've been on this path for decades, centuries, maybe even thousands of years. But one of the things, it doesn't always work when people are, sometimes there's backlash when people are trying to fight to be who they are, fight for the right to just exist on equal footing as everybody else. And one of your nicknames that really landed with me is called the Velvet Brick. And can you share a little bit about why you are called the Velvet Brick?
Yeah, I think that name came about because I try very hard to have those tough conversations that most people shy away from or avoid because of disagreement, or it may become argumentative or and that kind of thing. And I believe that we should be able to have those tough conversations about equality, conversations about race, conversations about what's happening in our society and our communities today, justice, injustice, whatever that looks like, even in the workplace. We should be able to have those conversations and still love each other in the end and still be able to be friends. Cross differentiating ideologies or ideas or thoughts we may have. I adopted that name because I have the ability, I think, in many ways to have those conversations and leave you thinking and move you to a place of action sometimes. But more than anything, where you don't feel like you were just beat up over the head. And so it hits hard, but it's a soft land, if that makes sense. And I'm okay with that. I'm not trying to leave you bloodied and bruised emotionally or verbally or in any kind of mentally abused in any kind of way, but I don't shy away from those conversations. I don't shy away from the hard topics that we deal with day to day in life with my colleague or with my friends or with people that are in my community for the sake of saying, you know, I don't want them to hate me or not like me, or maybe we won't connect anymore because of that conversation. I say, no, let's have the tough conversations. Let's talk about the difficult things. And perhaps both of us will leave it enlightened in some way. I'm not the be all and end all and know all of everything. Perhaps you can enlighten me. And on the other hand, I could perhaps do the same.
That's one of the things I've found. If you are open to hearing other people and really listening, you gain something. You gain connection, number one, which even if it's a tough conversation, navigating through a tough subject builds connection. And one of the big pieces here is to be able to have these conversations without eliciting fear and uncomfortable emotions that would make people want to shy away from these kind of conversations. I think of, I had a customer of mine years ago when I was bartending, and this was in this height of the Me Too thing. And he was a stagehand or something to that effect at the ballet. And it was during this time when so many of his coworkers became afraid to even say hello to the ballerinas, even though they saw them day in and day out, because there was this fear that something bad would happen to them if they did it wrong.
Right.
And I think across the board, there are so many people with this deep issue and fear of doing it wrong. So as leaders, it's so important for us to deliver and have these conversations in a way where people don't feel that shame that they are doing things wrong, that they are a bad person.
Correct. Yeah. I had a couple of situations just in the last year, I would say, and some as recent as the last few months. I'll share one with you. Again, with the first situation, I was at an event where I was speaking and I was sharing my truth about being a woman of color in the industry of insurance and financial services. And in that share time, I call it coming clean with my sisters who don't look like me. I was probably one of women of color, maybe I'll go to 10 out of 100, 150, 160 people, right? And I shared about my issue with my hair and how I would deliberately change my hair to look more European because I didn't want to offend a potential client or customer, because I didn't want them to think I was radical and or I'll just say it, too black, right, for them to handle. I'm black. I'm a black woman. Can't mistake that, right? You see me, here I come in all my glory. However, I had this thing about how I would wear my hair to certain meetings. And so for many years, I would wear my hair in twists and braids, and I'd have them coiffed, pulled up, very professional, looking nice. But I struggled with that day in and day out. I really did. And so I shared that today that doesn't bother me. I'm like, listen, sister, this is who you are. This is your truth, your hair and all, right? And so there's no need in you trying to be something that's not truly who you are. And if the client or the potential person can accept you for the professional individual that you are and for your skills and not because of what you look like, then that's their loss. So I'd shared this in the group, and it was a year and a half later that I was speaking at another event, and there was a woman in the room who came up to me at the end, and I didn't know that what I said moved her in this way. And she said, "Hi, Lisa, you don't know me, but I was at the event back in Las Vegas a couple of years ago, and I was in the room when you talked about your issue of hair and how day in and day out you struggled with that. And it was a deliberate, conscious thought in your mind every day." And she said, "And I thought to myself, wow, I never have to think that. That is not an issue for me." And she said, "And I left that meeting and I shared that with all of my girlfriends and my sisters. And I told them, wow, what a privilege we have that we don't have to think about that day in and day out." And I stood and I looked at her and I thought, I said all of that. Had no idea that it moved her in that way. And it wasn't intended to necessarily do that. I was just sharing my truth, right? And for her, she sat in the room and she went, wow, I never think about that. That's not something that I struggle with as a woman in the same industry as this lady. I don't worry about those things. Now, fast forward to 2022, I'm at an event and I had another sister that doesn't look like me ask if she could touch my hair. Now, I go, wow, what do I do with that? Now, there was another African-American woman in the circle when this question was asked, and then the other ladies were not. And I think everyone was waiting with bated breath to see what is her response going to be. What is she going to say? Because that's something you don't do. I don't know about your culture, but in my culture, no, you don't get to touch my hair, right? But in that moment, I thought I could react in a way that is expected, or I could react in a different way. And I decided to react in a different way. And I said, sure. And I leaned in and I let her touch it. And I could have said a multitude of things as though, and by the way, there was a bubble over my head. I'm not trying to act like I was all sweet and innocent in my thinking, because the bubble over my head was saying a whole bunch of other things. But I let her touch it. And she said, "Would you like to touch my ponytail?" And I went, "No, thanks. I'm good." So I thought about that later. And I went, if I had reacted in a way that said, "You know what? What are you thinking? Why do you want to do that? You shouldn't do that. And what did you think it was going to feel like?" And I could have said a whole lot of things that could have pushed her so far away from ever possibly even wanting to engage with a woman of color again. And I chose to not have her leave with that experience. Now, we will connect, and we have connected since then. And I use that as an educational moment between me and her, not between her and the whole group of people that were standing there. It wasn't necessary.
And so when you use that as an educational moment in a private conversation later, how did you convey to her that that's not necessarily what you should do or ask or say?
Yeah, it was more along the lines of, you know, listen, I appreciate your curiosity. Perhaps you've never experienced the touch of a woman of color's hair. I don't know. I said, but truly, that's not something that goes over very well. And had I been someone else, it may not have gone over very well. But as someone that has known you for a few years, right, and we have worked together over the years, you know, I thought, let me take this time to say you might not want to do that again, right? And this is how it made me feel. And I was able to share with her, honestly, this is how I felt in that moment. I felt almost like an animal in some ways, like you wanted to pet me. And that wasn't okay. Now, I know your intentions weren't that, and I know that you were probably not thinking that way, but that's how it felt. And she was able to receive that and go, oh, wow, I had no idea. But I could have barfed all over her with some words and some language that would not have been so nice, and it would not have done either one of us any good. And so I thought, rather than do that, let's take this away and discuss at a later time and make this a moment of teaching for her. And even for me to say, why would you even ask me? She said, it was so pretty. I just wanted to feel it, right? And I get that.
Right. So there's a few things to unpack here, especially in your first story. You know, you shared your experience, you shared your story. And I know one of the ways that we learn the most effectively is through story and metaphor. It is why the myths, the mythology, and the stories have been handed down long before we could write. Because these experiences that we have, the characters may change, the particular situation may change, but the emotions we feel are very similar. That stuff has not changed in a millennia. So when you share, this is one of the very powerful way to enlighten people without guilting them or shaming them, is sharing your experience and sharing what it feels like. And it allows people to have empathy, because if you're telling them that they should or should not do something, you're putting this wall up of what they have to do or there's repercussions.
Yes.
Versus giving them the opportunity to feel empathy. The next step, right? Empathy leads to compassion. So when you can understand where somebody else is going through, you know that you've had similar feelings. The situation might not be the same, but as human beings, most people, except for maybe sociopaths, have had the full range of human emotion. And so when you can tap into our emotional curiosity, our emotional feeling, you give people that sense of, hey, oh, this is maybe not the best thing to do. And so therefore I get to maybe adjust my behavior because I understand that feeling. I may not understand fully the situation or what it feels like to be a Black woman, but I understand that feeling of, oh, maybe being treated like I'm an animal. Or something to that nature.
Correct. Yeah. And it gives room for change, right? And now what's great is we get to walk this new path together as colleagues, you know, or as friends or as neighbors or as community members. We get to walk this new path. And a really good friend of mine, no one would ever put us together, but he's probably one of my best friends in the world today. He's like a brother. And he doesn't look like me. He's a white guy. He's a retired cop. And I remember there was a situation in Los Angeles a few years back. I mean, in the Bay Area, I'm sorry, Oakland, California, where things were happening with police officers getting shot. Just a number of things were happening in our country. They still are today, but they were really kicking off back then, about maybe five or six years ago. And he and I were out having sushi. And when they were shutting the highways down in the Bay Area and we were in Los Angeles, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, I need to probably get back on the road early tomorrow, leave this conference early, and because I don't want to get caught up in the middle of some stuff happening, right, or anything. And he said, yeah, you might want to do that. And then I was able to share with him, I had never told him about my fear of police officers. And we had this deep conversation about it. And I knew that this was his former profession in Northern California. And we had this deep conversation and he asked me why. And I told him about getting pulled over when I was in my 20s. I just made a wrong turn down a wrong street in the wrong neighborhood, or a neighborhood that I probably didn't look like I lived in. And I was taken in. Now I didn't get arrested, but they sure scared me to death. And it was late at night. I was driving home and I had a big old 1979 Cutlass Supreme stick shift, you know. And so it was not the cute car, but it was my big old, it got me where I needed to go. How about that?
Right.
And I shared this with him and I told him, since then, when I see a car or a police car, I turn down a different street. I will go out of my way to get from in front of them and all of these things. I mean, I just don't want a reason. And he heard that. And the very next day at breakfast, he came over to me. We were all suited up at this event. And he put his arm around my shoulder and he opened up his jacket and he showed me his badge that he still has. And he says, we're not all bad. we're not all bad. And that moved me in a way, it touches me even now as I'm sharing it with you, but it moved me in a way. And I went, well, I know that. I know that. And so I, from that day, I began taking steps forward to change the internal anxiety I would feel when a police officer would get near me because of this friendship, this conversation that I had. And it was just, and I tell them to this day, I say that was life changing for me. You have no idea. And the fact that we are so close today, this guy would go to the ground for me if I needed it. I know he would, and I would as well. Who knew that I would become probably one of the best friends in the world with the next police officer and was able to bear my truth to him, and he was able to bear his as well and say, yeah, I understand. He says, but all of us aren't like that. We're not all bad people, Lisa, and you need to know that. And I could feel his heart. And because I know him, I go, yeah, I can believe that. Because if there's half a dozen like you, then everybody can be bad.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I think about a friend of mine who's very involved in voting rights and politics. And years ago, her idea for how we heal racism in our country is policy, policy, policy. And my idea was that we've got to heal from the bottom up. The more people we heal from the bottom, that it will ripple out. And I don't think either viewpoint is incorrect. I think that combination through policy, one of the things that happens is we get more people in the room with diverse backgrounds. And when we have Correct. More people in the room with diverse backgrounds, we get to know each other in Yes. a different way. We get to have that empathy and hear those stories and understand that we struggle with the same feelings, not the same Yep. things, but the same feelings. Of maybe not feeling good enough, of feeling like we're excluded, of uh-huh. feeling like what we do is wrong or who we are is wrong. And when you can start to relate and mirror those similar feelings, we get to empathize and connect. And ultimately, yeah. I think connection is the place where we really heal it all.
No, it does. That is where it begins. And I tell you what, you know, one of the things I tell people often, because I work in the world, or I connect with people from all over that think just because we both have a job that we're equal. We both work at the same, that we're equal. And I go, well, there's a difference between equal and true equality. You know, equal in my mind means we all got shoes. We all got a pair of shoes. Equality means that my shoes fit my feet, that I don't have to put on a pair that's too small or too big. True equality means that I have not just the opportunity, but I have a real opportunity and it fits. You know, I'm not having to be you in that opportunity. I could be me in that opportunity. Which is basically what you just said, in that when you have diverse groups of people in the room, you know, everyone gets to be their true self in the room, right? It's like a pot of gumbo, you know, or some stew. If I'm the pea in the pot, then let me be the pea in the pot. If I'm the beef in the pot, then let me be that beef, right? Let me be all the flavor of what that is in its real true self. Don't make me act like the pea in the piece of corn or the potato. Let me be who I am. And that's what true DEI, that's what true diversity means. True equality means is that I get to be my true self at the table and it's okay. I don't have to come in the room and have straight blonde hair like you. I can come in with French braids or cornrows in my hair and still be heard and still have a voice.
Absolutely. And that's really what Be the Wolf is all about, right? We get to be our each individual self uh-huh. fully and completely. And a big piece of that really you know, one of the big things that comes from becoming the wolf is letting go of that belief, which I think is widespread. It's a ramp. This is the epidemic. This is probably the epidemic, is that we're not good enough. That belief that, you know, and it's different. Different people have different experiences of that, right? As women, we have had this culture that has been telling us that we're not good enough. As people of color, it's the same thing. You're not good enough. As men, if you're not successful enough, if you can't provide for a wife and 2.5 kids and make sure the wife doesn't work, blah, 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 you're not good enough. And so that feeling is really, I mean, let's break it down. It's really shame. It's really shame that you, who as who you are, is not enough. And that, I think, is the big thing, because people are bending who they are. You know, if from the get-go it was okay to just be who you are, then we wouldn't have these issues, except that it's the chicken and the egg situation, right? We've got to create the environment so that you can be who you are.
Right.
And part of that is by people being brave enough to do it, to be the wolf now and accept who they are and go to work with their hair however the F they want it to be. Without, and still having that confidence of not second guessing themselves in the back of their head. Well, maybe I should have done this. Is this the reason why I didn't get the deal or whatnot?
No, that's real talk. And I think we're getting to that place. I really believe that. I think more and more companies, more and more communities making that shift, because I think we're realizing on a day-by-day basis that having those differentiating opinions at the table and thought processes at the table only makes the organization stronger, only makes our company stronger, makes our community stronger, makes the fight stronger. You know, whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish, when you have a level of diversification with women and men, and whether you're gay or straight, and or you're Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, it makes the cause stronger. It builds a much stronger city, our cities, our country, even. But from a company standpoint, from an organizational standpoint, it makes us better, because we hear things and we see things and we're challenged in ways that we may not have ordinarily been challenged before, because everybody was thinking the same. Everybody was the same. And so it was easy. We just move in the same. It's interesting when I meet people and they say, oh, I'm really looking for someone, or I like that person, I'm going to hire that person because they remind me of myself. And I go, wow, well, I will never do that. Not in a lot of ways, I may not remind you of yourself, right? And how about, you know, boy, I really like to be partnered with that person or connected with that person because, gosh, they're going to bring some amazing value to me. They'll bring amazing value to my organization or my team or whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish. They're going to add value to that. And I'm seeing a shift in language, a shift in the phraseology out there within my industry, within the people that I connect with. I'm starting to hear a shift and see a shift in some of that language, which makes me excited and makes me actually very happy.
And this is the thing for all of you leaders out there. And I know we have this tendency to want to hire and work with people that we relate to. There is this natural affinity to want to find your tribe and feel comfortable and safe in around these people that, you know, look the same and act the same and think the same and all of that. And while that is wonderful and that feels nice and lovely, when you're talking about business, it does not create the best businesses always, because you have gaps. If you have a team full of big picture thinkers, who's going to work on the systems and who's going to work on the little details?
Right.
If you have people that all think this one way, who's going to pick up the gap that something that everybody over here is letting fall through the cracks because they don't have a particular way of looking at things. And in really powerful CEOs and leaders of companies that are successful and typically create better work environments are looking at where are the gaps that we have in our company and who is the best person to fill that.
Right.
It's not so much. And of course, likability always plays a role.
Of course.
But that is, you just don't have to be an asshole. If you're interviewing with a company that's like that, where they're looking for the right fit to uphold the values of a company, because that is important,
mm-hmm.
and to fill in the gaps, you're going to have so much more opportunity to thrive and grow as an individual. And that is one of the keys to happiness, is to continue to grow and learn. So when we shelter ourselves in these little communities where everybody and everything thinks exactly the same, we are robbing ourselves actually of happiness.
Yeah, we miss out, I think. We miss out on quite a bit. Think of the tribe of people that I'm surrounded with on a regular basis, and we don't all look alike. However, gosh, I have gained so much. And someone asked me about my journey to success, my journey along this path, and I like to call it this yellow brick road that I've been on. And I've been sent the tin man, the lion, and the scarecrow. And none of them are the same. Their needs are all different. But gosh, they all were trying to get to a one common goal, and that was to get to Oz, only to find out that they didn't need Oz, right? They just needed each other. And so, you know, I have been surrounded by my own 10-man scarecrow and lion that have locked arms with me. Every time I think about that, I picture them locking arms and dancing down the yellow brick road. And I've got my own set of colleagues and tribe of people that don't look like Lisa that have helped me on this journey along the way. And they have locked arms. And it has been amazing, the things we've been able to accomplish together and the doors that we've been able to break down together and the walls that they have helped me live beyond and helped me bust through has been nothing short of a miracle in some ways.
So that leads me to my next question, which is, you have a book that will be coming out soon.
Okay.
And, you know, it is about breaking through these walls. Can you share a bit about what is in your story in this book?
Well, I'll tell you what inspired it. My biological father was imprisoned. And he was a man that I wasn't raised around, but I knew him as a teenager is when I met him. And behind the prison walls is where he really affirmed who I was as his daughter and as a woman in business and as a person with an entrepreneurial way of thinking. He affirmed that. And it was in those letters that he would write me from prison, from jail. I said, this is who you are. This is who you will become. And as you get older, you're only going to get better. You won't be able to help it because it's in your genes. You know, my father and my uncles, this is what they all did. Man, you are doing the same thing. You're on that same path. These are men that I didn't even know in my life. But it was because of those moments, those letters that he sent me and those conversations he and I would have while he was behind the walls, helped me begin to break through the walls that people have created for me. Walls that sometimes I allowed myself to build up around me, walls that are perceived, and some walls that were smoke screens that weren't real. And then walls that I allowed other people in my life to place to say, you can't go past here. You can't overcome that. It was during those times and those conversations with my dad and those letters that he wrote me from the prison, behind the prison walls, that allowed me to begin to bust through my own walls. And to now live beyond them, because they're no longer there. And I get to live beyond those walls. And so that's what my story is how do we now live beyond the walls that are perceived but walls that have been created for us and walls that we actually put in place ourselves. Some are necessary, but many are not.
Right. It's like creating the healthy structure and yes. walls so that we can create and thrive inside. That's mm-hmm. the place of that's that balance of where it's like the tree. It yes. creates a healthy, strong trunk foundation and root structure so that the branches can blow in the breeze.
Yes.
And one of the things that I really hear in your story is that these letters really helped you to break down those beliefs of what you should or should not. What you would or would not be according to the outside world that's beyond you, because it really so much of what holds us each back is this belief mm-hmm. that we cannot do it, that right. nobody that looks like me or thinks like me can do it, that I am not good enough, right? There's that thing again, to do it. And mm-hmm. when we change a belief, everything changes.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I had a high school, actually in one of my chapters, I talk about this. In high school, I always wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to go into journalism. And I remember talking to the high school counselor, and she totally discouraged me from that. She says, oh no, you might not do that. There are not hardly any Black people or women, Black women, especially in that field. You will never, never make it in that industry. And I went, oh my gosh. And so she encouraged me to go into something like home economics or secretarial work. And not that that's demeaning or anything, but my heart and my passion was I wanted to write. I wanted to be a journalist because that's what I took extra credit classes all through high school, creative writing, expository writing, all of these things. I'd go to summer school on purpose. Some kids had to go to summer school. I went on purpose and took classes to help get me there. But she totally discouraged me from that. And unfortunately, my parents, I come from a very large family, and they worked. And so they weren't up there. Not that I wouldn't blame them, but I didn't have that support system at home that came up to the school and said, hey, don't tell my daughter that. She can do this. And so I listened to this counselor and I took another path, right? And I took another path. And so I just remember it from very early on, that wall that was thrust in my face as a 17-year-old. And I lived with that wall for a good while. You know, I believed that talk for a long time. That talk was stuck in the back of my head that you could never do something like that, that you're not strong enough or smart enough, or, you know, you'll never make a living being a journalist based on what she had to say. So,
yes. You know, I think about a lot of teachers. A lot of teachers do this, and their heart is in the good place. Sure. They don't want that child to experience more pain and more struggle. So they want to give them this easier, more comfortable path. And this is what the average person is doing. They are leaning into the comfortable path, and that is their choice, and there is nothing wrong with that. And also a more empowering way. Right. Because if we're not telling people what they should do, how do we empower people to make their own choices and to decide what they can and cannot do? Right. We tell a story so that you can empathize, and then it's up to them, and we leave the ball in their court. They can choose to take action or not. And so, you know, I think about a way to have that conversation might have been like, Lisa, I really support your desire to want to be a journalist. And there will be some obstacles that you will face that maybe somebody else might not face. And here's right. what they are. I believe that you are strong enough to do this, but it is your choice. You right. have to be and the one that decides.
Let me see what I can do to help you in those areas, right? That's
yes.
it. There was none of that.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's a conversation that I remember vividly, but it's also something that I had to tear down in my own thinking, in my own psyche as an adult, honestly, to be able to move on and to move beyond that to greater things. And I've been able to do that.
Yes, you are an inspiration. You are the wolf. You are one of the many wolves that I have interviewed on this show, and many more to come, oh, everybody.
That's right.
It's so much about, you know, even though we have people telling us what we should and should not do, it is up to you to decide what it is that you want to do and that you're capable of. Because I guarantee you, every single one of you is capable of so much more than you even think.
That's right.
You are so big and powerful, and you can create so many things if you decide that that's what you want.
That's right.
So, Lisa, tell me,
I'm going to have one more question after this, but tell me, how are people going to pre-order your book? Because I know I want to read it, and I know some of the listeners do too. How do they get in touch with you to have you help them with leadership development, to speak at events? Tell us all the things.
Yes. Well, you know, the best way to connect with me is via LinkedIn. You can message me, private message me on LinkedIn. You can also send me an email, and that's Lisa M. Hutcherson, and that's HUTCHERSON at gmail.com. I will also be providing the links to pre-order my books via LinkedIn, and also in if you just email me directly. And you can also hit me up on Facebook at Lisa Edwards Hutcherson, but it'll show up just as Lisa Hutcherson on Facebook, and you'll be able to connect with me that way as well.
Yeah. Okay. So my last question for you is, if you were going to give your past self or the people listening, well, I guess, and or both, a piece of advice, what would you tell your past self and the people listening that they can take away from your experience, your knowledge?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would tell my past self is life is a roller coaster, girl. And though you are afraid of roller coasters, because I am, hop on and get on for the ride. There will be ups and downs, twists and turns, and it will be slow in spots and it will go fast in spots. But just hang on for the ride, because it's going to be amazing and it's going to be joyful and it's going to be fun in the end. Though there will be scary points along the way, in the end, you'll be glad that you did it.
Yes. Yes. I think about my own journey. I'm like, whoa, what a roller coaster that has been.
Absolutely. Yes, right.
And it's such the dynamic range of human experience, right? All of the emotions from joy to the other stuff.
That's right. Absolutely. And then last, I would say to myself is to always surround yourself with people who are smarter, people that know more, people who have endured the journey, people who have gone to where you're trying to get to. Know them, get to know them, be intentional about connecting with them, because doors will open, encounters will happen that you never would have imagined would happen, like me and my friend who's a retired cop. I would have never, and even to look at the two of us today, if you see us in the room together, you would never put us together. But boy, we're thick as thieves. And so you'll be amazed and surprised at the people who will join you on life's journey and who will become some of your closest confidants and business partners along the way.
I love it. I love it. And you know, that connection really is a big piece of what helps us to thrive, grow, and find joy.
That's right.
And I know a lot of people out there are struggling. They're on one of those scary points on the roller coaster in their career. And they're like, this is not the place I want to be.
Yeah, it gets better. Believe me, it gets better. This past year that I think I've hit every high and every low. And I tell you, I'm in the light now.
Yes, I love that. And for those of you that are in a scary point in their career, not knowing exactly what the next right step for them is, if they want to have some support finding their way to the light, you can book a call with me. Let's have a conversation. I want to help you to be your own wolf, of course, and really thrive, grow, and find joy in your career, because that is what makes the heart happy, right? It doesn't have to be all scary place. We can actually work in these places where we get to be our full selves and feel good and look forward to going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lisa, I am so grateful that you came to share your experiences and the smooth way you deliver the brick, the velvet brick. Thank you again for just being here, being you, and contributing to the world in the way that you are.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We will see you next time. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Be the Wolf. Please take a moment to rate, share, and follow this podcast so that together we can inspire others to be the wolf.